Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Rozumienie ze słuchu. Poziom rozszerzony. Wysłuchaj dokładnie informacji dotyczących tej części egzaminu. Rozumienie ze słuchu trwa 25 minut i składa się z trzech zadań. Zadania te sprawdzają umiejętność rozumienia wypowiedzi rodzimych użytkowników języka angielskiego. Usłyszysz nagranie, które zawiera zarówno teksty, jak i polecenia do poszczególnych zadań. Każdy tekst zostanie odtworzony dwa razy. Na płycie przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z treścią zadań oraz ich rozwiązanie, sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz natomiast dźwięk. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania zgodnie z usłyszanymi poleceniami w czasie słuchania tekstów oraz w trakcie trwania przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie czwarte. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie wypowiedź greckiego szefa kuchni na temat prawidłowego przyrządzania potrawy typowej dla kuchni greckiej. Z podanych odpowiedzi wybierz tę, która jest zgodna z informacjami zawartymi w nagraniu. Zakreśl literę A, B, C lub D. Za każde poprawne rozwiązanie otrzymasz jeden punkt.
You will hear as Pavlos Georgiadis from Slow Food Thrace in northern Greece explains how to prepare an authentic horiatiki, what most of us know as a Greek salad.
There's no such thing as a Greek salad in Greece. Here we call it horiatiki, which means of the village. It's a typical summer salad that combines sun-ripened tomatoes, chilled cucumber, onion, olives, feta, rye rusks, wild mountain oregano, and extra virgin olive oil, the noble emblem of the Greek culture. In each of Greece's historic regions, the salad expresses the flavors of the territory. The variations are endless, based on the hundreds of varieties of tomatoes, dozens of types of feta cheese, and the diversity of olive varieties. On the islands, people usually add pickled capers and their leaves. In northern Greece, we like to add spicy green peppers. This salad is the epicenter of the summer table, which has been nourishing Greek families generation after generation. We must take time to taste and to understand the story and the origins of our food. It's the only thing we can do to overcome the crisis we've been thrown into by the standardized industrial food system. Put some Greece in your life, create a garden, and enjoy this salad. The quality of this salad is determined by the flavor of the sun-ripened tomatoes, crisp cucumbers, aromatic peppers, and oregano, and intensely flavored olive oil. Without them, it will be flat and tasteless, so stick to making it during the summer months. To serve four portions, we will need 6 unripened tomatoes, fresh from your garden or a local organic farm market at room temperature, 1 cucumber chilled, 1 small onion, a handful of quality olives of your choice, preserved in olive oil, salt, or brine, 200 fresh goat sheep's milk feta crumbled with a hand into generous pieces, dried oregano to taste, 1-2 rye rusks called paximadi in Greece, a hard dried bread made from 100 wholemeal stone milled rye flour, sea salt, extra virgin olive oil. Cut the tomatoes and cucumbers into cubed pieces and place in a salad bowl. Slice the onion and pepper thinly and add together with the olives and the rusks crumbled into pieces. Mix gently. Top with the feta, season with a sparkling of oregano and sea salt, and dress generously with the olive oil. Leave to rest for half an hour to allow the dry rusk to soak up the juices and the flavors to mingle. Enjoy.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
You will hear as Pavlos Georgiadis from Slow Food Thrace in northern Greece explains how to prepare an authentic horiatiki, what most of us know as a Greek salad.
There's no such thing as a Greek salad in Greece. Here we call it horiatiki, which means of the village. It's a typical summer salad that combines sun-ripened tomatoes, chilled cucumber, onion, olives, feta, rye rusks, wild mountain oregano, and extra virgin olive oil, the noble emblem of the Greek culture. In each of Greece's historic regions, the salad expresses the flavors of the territory. The variations are endless, based on the hundreds of varieties of tomatoes, dozens of types of feta cheese, and the diversity of olive varieties. On the islands, people usually add pickled capers and their leaves. In northern Greece, we like to add spicy green peppers. This salad is the epicenter of the summer table, which has been nourishing Greek families generation after generation. We must take time to taste and to understand the story and the origins of our food. It's the only thing we can do to overcome the crisis we've been thrown into by the standardized industrial food system. Put some Greece in your life, create a garden, and enjoy this salad. The quality of this salad is determined by the flavor of the sun-ripened tomatoes, crisp cucumbers, aromatic peppers and oregano, and intensely flavored olive oil. Without them, it will be flat and tasteless, so stick to making it during the summer months. To serve four portions, we will need 6 unripened tomatoes, fresh from your garden or a local organic farm market at room temperature, 1 cucumber chilled, 1 small onion, a handful of quality olives of your choice, preserved in olive oil, salt or brine, 200 fresh goat sheep's milk feta, crumbled with a hand into generous pieces, dried oregano to taste, 1-2 rye rusks called paximadi in Greece, a hard dried bread made from 100 wholemeal stone milled rye flour, sea salt, extra virgin olive oil. Cut the tomatoes and cucumbers into cubed pieces and place in a salad bowl. Slice the onion and pepper thinly and add together with the olives and the rusks crumbled into pieces. Mix gently. Top with the feta, season with a sparkling of oregano and sea salt, and dress generously with the olive oil. Leave to rest for half an hour to allow the dry rusk to soak up the juices and the flavors to mingle. Enjoy.
Przenieś rozwiązania na kartę odpowiedzi. Zadanie piąte. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie 5 historii opisujących dziwne zbiegi okoliczności. Do każdej anegdoty dopasuj właściwy nagłówek od A do G, wpisując odpowiednią literę do tabeli. Uwaga! Dwa nagłówki zostały podane dodatkowo i nie pasują do żadnej historii. Za każde poprawne rozwiązanie otrzymasz jeden punkt.
One.
Mr. MacDonald was a farmer who lived in Canada. Nothing extraordinary in that, until you learned that his postcode contained the letter sequence EIEIO.
Two.
A 15-year-old pupil at Argoat High School in North Wales was the city's GCSE examinations in 1990. His name was James Bond. His examination paper reference was 007.
3.
Mark Twain was born on the day of the appearance of Halley's Comet in 1835 and died on the day of its next appearance in 1910. He himself predicted this in 1909 when he said, "I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It is coming again next year and I expect to go out with it."
4.
While American novelist Anne Parrish was browsing bookstore in Paris in the 1920s, she came upon a book that was one of her childhood favorites, Jack Frost and Other Stories. She picked up the old book and showed it to her husband, telling him of the book she fondly remembered as a child. Her husband took the book, opened it, and on the flyleaf found the inscription, Anne Parrish, 209 and North Weber Street, Colorado Springs. It was Anne's very own book.
5.
As the inhabitants of Ruthwell, Dumfriesshire, were watching a scene in the film Around the World in 80 Days, where a hot air balloon was about to take off, their TV sets went off due to a power cut. Nearby, power lines had been damaged because hot air balloon had crashed into them.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1.
Mr. MacDonald was a farmer who lived in Canada. Nothing extraordinary in that, until you learned that his postcode contained the letter sequence EIEIO.
2.
A 15-year-old pupil at Argoat High School in North Wales was the city's GCSE examinations in 1990. His name was James Bond. His examination paper reference was 007.
3.
Mark Twain was born on the day of the appearance of Halley's Comet in 1835 and died on the day of its next appearance in 1910. He himself predicted this in 1909 when he said, "I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835. It is coming again next year and I expect to go out with it."
4.
While American novelist Anne Parrish was browsing bookstore in Paris in the 1920s, she came upon a book that was one of her childhood favorites, Jack Frost and Other Stories. She picked up the old book and showed it to her husband, telling him of the book she fondly remembered as a child. Her husband took the book, opened it, and on the flyleaf found the inscription, Anne Parrish, 209, and North Weber Street, Colorado Springs. It was Anne's very own book.
5.
As the inhabitants of Ruthwell, Dumfriesshire, were watching a scene in the film Around the World in 80 Days, where a hot air balloon was about to take off, their TV sets went off due to a power cut. Nearby, power lines had been damaged because hot air balloon had crashed into them.
Przenieś rozwiązania na kartę odpowiedzi. Zadanie szóste. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie tekst na temat snu. Zaznacz w tabeli znakiem X, które zdania są zgodne z treścią nagrania T, true, a które nie, F, false. Za każde poprawne rozwiązanie otrzymasz jeden punkt.
Why do we dream? The human brain is a mysterious little ball of grey matter. After all these years, researchers are still baffled by many aspects of how and why it operates like it does. Scientists have been performing sleep and dream studies for decades now, and we still aren't 100% sure about the function of sleep or exactly how and why we dream. We do know that our dream cycle is typically most abundant and best remembered during the REM stage of sleep. It's also pretty commonly accepted among the scientific community that we all dream, though the frequency in which dreams are remembered varies from person to person. The question of whether dreams actually have a physiological, biological, or psychological function has yet to be answered. But that hasn't stopped scientists from researching and speculating. There are several theories as to why we dream. One is that dreams work hand in hand with sleep to help the brain sort through everything it collects during the waking hours. Your brain is met with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of inputs each day. Some are minor sensory details, like the color of a passing car, while others are far more complex, like the big presentation you're putting together for your job. During sleep, the brain works to plow through all of this information to decide what to hang on to and what to forget. Some researchers feel like dreams play a role in this process. It's not just a stab in the dark, though. There is some research to back up the ideas that dreams are tied to how we form memories. Studies indicate that as we are learning new things in our waking hours, dreams increase while we sleep. Participants in a dream study who were taking a language course showed more dream activity than those who were not. In light of such studies, the idea that we use our dreams to sort through and convert short-term memories into long-term memories has gained some momentum in recent years. Another theory is that dreams typically reflect our emotions. During the day, our brains are working hard to make connections to achieve certain functions. Some scientists have proposed that at night everything slows down. We aren't required to focus on anything during sleep, so our brains make very loose connections. It's during sleep that the emotions of the day battle it out in our dream cycle. If something is weighing heavily on your mind during the day, chances are you might dream about it either specifically or through obvious imagery. For instance, if you're worried about losing your job to company downsizing, you may dream you're a shrunken person living in a world of giants, or you're wandering aimlessly through a great desert abyss. We know that the rear portion of our brain gets pretty active during REM sleep, when most dreaming occurs. Some think that it's just the brain winding down for the night, and that dreams are random and meaningless firings of the brain that we don't have when we are awake. The truth is, as long as the brain remains such a mystery, we probably won't be able to pinpoint with absolute certainty exactly why we dream.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Why do we dream? The human brain is a mysterious little ball of grey matter. After all these years, researchers are still baffled by many aspects of how and why it operates like it does. Scientists have been performing sleep and dream studies for decades now, and we still aren't 100% sure about the function of sleep or exactly how and why we dream. We do know that our dream cycle is typically most abundant and best remembered during the REM stage of sleep. It's also pretty commonly accepted among the scientific community that we all dream, though the frequency in which dreams are remembered varies from person to person. The question of whether dreams actually have a physiological, biological, or psychological function has yet to be answered. But that hasn't stopped scientists from researching and speculating. There are several theories as to why we dream. One is that dreams work hand in hand with sleep to help the brain sort through everything it collects during the waking hours. Your brain is met with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of inputs each day. Some are minor sensory details, like the colour of a passing car, while others are far more complex, like the big presentation you're putting together for your job. During sleep, the brain works to plough through all of this information to decide what to hang on to and what to forget. Some researchers feel like dreams play a role in this process. It's not just a stab in the dark, though. There is some research to back up the ideas that dreams are tied to how we form memories. Studies indicate that as we are learning new things in our waking hours, dreams increase while we sleep. Participants in a dream study who were taking a language course showed more dream activity than those who were not. In light of such studies, the idea that we use our dreams to sort through and convert short-term memories into long-term memories has gained some momentum in recent years. Another theory is that dreams typically reflect our emotions. During the day, our brains are working hard to make connections to achieve certain functions. Some scientists have proposed that at night everything slows down. We aren't required to focus on anything during sleep, so our brains make very loose connections. It's during sleep that the emotions of the day battle it out in our dream cycle. If something is weighing heavily on your mind during the day, chances are you might dream about it either specifically or through obvious imagery. For instance, if you're worried about losing your job to company downsizing, you may dream you're a shrunken person living in a world of giants, or you're wandering aimlessly through a great desert abyss. We know that the rear portion of our brain gets pretty active during REM sleep, when most dreaming occurs. Some think that it's just the brain winding down for the night, and that dreams are random and meaningless firings of the brain that we don't have when we are awake. The truth is, as long as the brain remains such a mystery, we probably won't be able to pinpoint with absolute certainty exactly why we dream.
Przenieś rozwiązania na kartę odpowiedzi. Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął. Sprawdź, czy wszystkie rozwiązania zostały przeniesione na kartę odpowiedzi. Następnie przystąp do wykonywania pozostałych zadań.